Hello, America, and to all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host, the most Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Chris Logie. Say hi to the good people, Chris.
Hello.
Hey, so this episode is going to be for September 10th, 2022, and, obviously some things went down this week, and we were prepared to talk about them, but let's be honest. After yesterday, it all got drowned out by just one single subject that I think a lot of people knew was coming, but I guess it happened so suddenly that it kind of caught a lot of people off guard. But it basically dominated the news cycle all day yesterday and much of it today as well. We will be talking about that, but it's not the only thing we've got to talk about. We got some legal shenanigans, some more from the ongoing legal saga of Steve Bannon. We've also got stories of some stolen antiquities getting returned to their rightful owner. Some news from minor league baseball. And you're thinking, what exactly could be the point of a story of minor league baseball? You'll find out. And of course we got a bunch of the stuff from D23 that we found out this week, including trailers, news, and a bunch of other stuff as well. Before we get to all that, just sort of do like we always do every week. You'll notice, we got kind of a small crowd this week. That's mostly because Teresa is out, doing family stuff. Since, you know, her son's in the school band and everything, and they got stuff to do. So, she's out and about, but, we got you covered. And, starting as always, we're going to go ahead and start with all the stuff we've been up to this week. So, Chris, what have you been doing this week?
A lot of work.
Yeah.
This week, and seeing the, weather kind of just keep progressing, and then, as we get closer to breaking out of the high for most days being in the 80s, maybe had a couple more days of that here to go. But yeah, a lot of 70s, which is nice, especially as we'd like to stop having super humid, awful days here. Mm. So then we march towards freezing cold, snowy days, which is the opposite side of the spectrum.
Yeah.
But, yeah, been able to watch some stuff this week. Managed to watch Jurassic World Dominion.
Mm-hmm.
This is on Peacock.
Mm.
I watched the extended edition that has, like, 14 extra minutes of footage. I don't know that they basically seem like they put everything they could potentially put in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause there is almost too much in this movie. It tries to continue on a lot of the story from the other Jurassic World movies,
mm-hmm.
especially with Fallen Kingdom, where it ends with the dinosaurs being released from this big mansion where they were going to, you know, hold some sort of secret auction of these dinosaurs to a bunch of wealthy, terrible people. The weird thing is like the progression of that to this movie where the dinosaurs, I guess, are all around the world at this point,
mm-hmm.
in a way that's like, okay, that's weird.
Yeah.
And especially cause they still introduce like new species here,
mm-hmm.
where I'm like, how are we getting new species? They stopped, they got all the dinosaurs off the island of sorts, but, I think they kind of explained that because Biosyn, the like tech company that's behind the sort of resurgence of Jurassic Park and all that, is sort of the big bad here,
mm-hmm.
as kind of this whole movie is about climate change and how the ecosystems are changing and big tech and these other big companies are trying to ruin the world with their shit they're trying to do that isn't, you know, helping save humanity in any way.
Mm-hmm.
Like Biosyn deals with a lot of genetic engineering and all this stuff. So much so to the creation of like giant locusts that are killing people's crops if they're not using like Biosyn seed for their stuff there. And it's kind of a, and that's where Ellie Sattler and Dr. Grant are, her Grant are brought in from, you know, the original movie, as they are investigating that part of the whole equation. That is like, oh, the, if this continues on, like the global food supply will be almost entirely controlled by Biosyn, sort of thing, and like how that goes. And then there's the Jurassic World timeline with Chris Pratt's character and all that, where they have the girl from the second movie who is a clone of a former Jurassic Park scientist, like one of the early scientists, who is a potential solution to something here. She is, you know, a human clone, like one of the first ever, and especially done in an early form. That's a whole weird storyline that plays into things, and Henry Wu gets involved with that. You know, him as the one of the main scientists shown in Jurassic Park, who's stuck around in a way. And then there's Ian Malcolm, who's been like employed by Biosyn for some reason to be like a lecturer on campus for some reason, because they're just that rich. They'll just employ people to do that. Especially someone like Ian Malcolm, who's literally going on and on about how Biosyn's ruining the world to the people working at Biosyn. Kind of a whole weird thing. But yeah, the it's kind of a huge, weird mess of a movie that feels pretty good in times, but it's kind of like this could have maybe been like two movies worth of stuff, like build up with one movie and then go into the other for some reason. But yeah, it's a lot of messy stuff as they kind of just pile on all of this to it. And kind of the ultimate message is like, oh, we gotta be careful about what we do to make sure we're taking care of, you know, the ecosystem and all the living things, and not try to kill them all to make money. And like the leader of Biosyn literally is like a Tim Cook looking dude. So yeah, that's a whole weird ass movie. Never recommend checking it out if you watch the other Jurassic Park and Jurassic World movies. It's not as good as like Jurassic Park 1 and Jurassic World, but it's enjoyable in its own way. But yeah, let's see. Also watched the new Pinocchio on Disney Plus. That went up, the live action CGI remake of the original. That is a good movie. It makes some changes. Kind of the ending kind of changes things to be probably less creepy in the end. Because I don't know how they would have handled that, but they do some pretty interesting stuff. They add a new character with Sophia the Seagull, who kind of explains how, if you've seen like the original Pinocchio, when Pinocchio and Jiminy get back to the house and find out like, oh, Geppetto's gone. He's like sold all his crap to get a boat to go look for Pinocchio. You know, like the how do they find out what's going on?
Right.
It's like, oh, because Sophia shows up to let Jiminy. In the original, they just a letter shows up somehow. And like how Geppetto finds out they're at Pleasure Island. It's like, oh, Sophia shows up with a flyer for the island kind of thing. And I guess Geppetto knows what that is, even though he's like, I haven't been out of my house in 20 years or something like that.
Yeah.
But that's a weird thing. And I think it kind of reminded me of like the, they do the whole donkey scene, though not as maybe traumatically as it is in the original. They do some of that, but a lot of the bit at the end, there's like, smoke monsters that gather all the the donkeys for shipping them off to the salt mines and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I was like, wait, were there smoke monsters in the original? I looked it up. I guess you could interpret it that way. They're kind of just like mysterious black, like humanoid figures.
Yeah.
That if you probably dig into it, could be like metaphors for slavery or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like slaves that would be hired to do this kind of work.
Yeah.
Send these donkeys off to be slaves elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of thing. So that was kind of weird. Though the CG with the Pleasure Island is all kinds of weird.
Yeah.
It's very obviously like green screen or blue screen type stuff. Because the Pinocchio and his buddy Lampwick are just basically sitting in like a boat ride as they just go through all these different like attractions at Pleasure Island.
Mm-hmm.
And like the weird thing is in the original Pinocchio movie, like Pinocchio gains like a weird ego once he becomes like a star at the marionette show.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. And going into Pleasure Island and all that. Whereas here he kind of keeps his innocence a lot because he's going through Pleasure Island as they kind of get him to there. And he's like looking on at like the weird stuff they're doing. Like, here's a place where you just loot a store for some reason. I don't know. Like a place where the people just destroy clocks, I guess.
Yep.
That kind of stuff. And it's like, you're just looking on like, why? Who would want to do this? It's like a kind of thing, especially when he learns like, oh, Geppetto has all these clocks that he's made because they were for his wife that passed away at a certain point. So yeah, it's a lot of weird stuff. And like the CG is weird because like there's like one person, that one kid that is like throwing these clocks like a bowling ball to knock down other clocks, and they just kind of fall apart like they're made of, you know, barely put together kind of thing. I don't know. It's a lot of weird stuff there.
Yeah. And
instead of beer, they have root beer.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing, which it's done up the same way. Just like
this
weird brown drink with a bunch of foam on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
There's no like smoking or anything like that.
Yeah.
But they do have the big scene when they're playing pool as like the last two kids around for some reason.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was pretty good. There's maybe some of the CG stuff looks really nice and others doesn't, mainly around that Pleasure Island stuff.
Yeah.
That's really kind of jarring, but it's also probably the scene where there's the most CG going on at one time versus like, you know, a normal, I guess it's supposed to be like a German town or is it a French town? But it's like just normal town looking thing with kids running around and adults and with like one puppet that is, you know, smaller than he is in the original movie. Where in the original movie he's like kid sized, whereas here he's like half the size of the other kids to be more like, I guess, puppety. But it's a pretty solid movie. We're checking out, and then also watched Cobra Kai season 5. I'm halfway through, and this thing is going some places.
I've been told that.
Basically, the episode I just finished ends with a bit that is like the first trailer for Avengers Endgame, where they're like, "We've got the evil bad guy that we need to stop, and figure out how to stop him because he is in." Unstoppable force, so we need to band together and form alliances that we didn't think we would have to form and all this. And it's like, you're pulling out every single stop you got, every single character you can mine out of this the first three movies somehow. Like the weird kid that gets pulled out of LA to go fight Daniel in the third movie, he shows up for some reason. He just happens to be in town too, like everybody else. But yeah, and they bring in like the girlfriend he had in the third movie, the red hair girl that gets beat up as well as her. So they're pulling all the stops. I'm looking forward to watching the rest of it, but it's just going some wild places. that I'm enjoying. So
mm-hmm.
there's that for games. Been playing more Saints Row. Mm. I've kind of stopped doing story missions and just done some of the collecting stuff. Because they have a whole weird collection mechanic where you're like getting statues and such you can put around your home base from other parts of the city, but instead of like physically taking it, you're just going around taking pictures of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a weird thing, but the annoying thing is it just tells you like this is in this district, and you look for this building, and then it's somewhere nearby.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see it in the picture mode. There's like a big frame around it, and then you might see the item itself like glowing blue. So you know, you're like, oh, that's something I should take a picture of.
Mm-hmm.
So I've just been running around the towns doing that, and then occasionally other side stuff if I feel like it. So that's been largely that. Let's see. I was playing more Tinykin. I think I'm on the last level or two to go. Been enjoying that a lot. So looking forward to putting more time into that. And we got a new season here. So been putting some time into that as well. But that's been pretty much it for me. So how about you, Brandon?
Well, as for me, I finished the main story for Yakuza Like a Dragon. That game obviously ends on a pretty highly emotional note and is also really difficult. You would think that the last boss of that game would be super difficult. Not so. It's actually the guy you fight before him that is the most difficult. And it's mostly because he's nigh impervious to any attack you throw at him. I won't really spoil a whole lot, but basically the guy you go up against is like a former boxer, and he's basically built like one too. And pretty much any like regular attack that you throw at him, even if you're like up to like level 50 or over, is only going to do like 3 or 4 bits of damage. Even like the really, you know, special moves and stuff like that, you know, skills, even that will like not do a whole lot on him. So basically you have to make sure that your party has like one character that has like a poison attack, because he actually is like a weak poison. And you also have to have the one character on there who can like heal the whole party, you know, during it, because every one of his attacks pack a huge punch. And the thing is, it's like a two-part battle too, because after the first part, he takes out a pair of brass knuckles, and then his already very powerful attacks become twice as powerful as they were the first time. So, you know, that particular fight took me like a good... Oh, it took me like a good 30 minutes to finish, because it was long and drawn out. But once you get rid of him, you then go on to what is basically the last boss fight, and it's no cakewalk, but it's significantly less difficult than the other one was. So I finished that, and then I've got another game that I'm playing for the last couple of days. I can't talk about it just yet because it's still under review embargo. But suffice it to say, it's one of the games a lot of us have been anticipating a chance to play. And I honestly can't wait to get a chance to actually talk about it, because I've really enjoyed it, enjoying it. But other than that, not much else. Still, you know, really into like Visual Case type stuff. I put some more Malice Miser stuff up. Actually, I found out recently it's supposed to be pronounced Malice Miser, because miser is supposed to be like miserable or something, because, you know, Japan. You know, good stuff, and really just enjoying the fact that, you know, I can walk outside now and not, you know, melt. It's been pretty, you know, the weather's been pretty good. It was only like a high of like 78 today, which is fairly cool. And, you know, which is fairly cool, at least, you know, compared to what we have been. And then it's, you know, pretty much going to be more or less like that, you know, for the foreseeable rest of the month. I mean, it's going to be like, you know, getting up to like mid-80s, but, you know, compared to, you know, being in the 90s like it had been for much of this summer, I'll take it. That's pretty much what I've been up to. So, you got anything you want to add before we move on?
Nope.
Nope. Okay. Well then, with that out of the way, it is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And, I think as a lot of people have been, who have been paying attention to the news, and probably have been, you know, familiar with public affairs and stuff for a while, every so often there's like a thing where suddenly a book or books get published, and suddenly there's some group there that wants to either ban it outright, or they want to greatly restrict people's ability to read it. And this has been a tale as old as time, right? Pretty much since the printing press itself came into existence, there have always been people who've been trying to, you know, repress books or destroy them or burn them or anything like that. And generally, you know, at least in a modern sense, living in a democratic society, we like to think that, you know, we are, you know, we generally don't do that, you know, at least not in the modern era. You know, maybe, you know, especially because, you know, in our culture, the idea of like trying to ban a book is something that quite a good number of Americans find anathema, like extremely anathema. Especially when it has to do with like school books and stuff that goes into school libraries, people go nuts. And obviously we aren't necessarily impervious to the idea of book banning, in our country in particular, things like, you know, it used to be that it was very easy for a book to get banned on obscenity grounds for even the most lightest type of like sexual material inside of it. Famously, Lady Chatterley's Lover is generally the book that's sort of one of the biggest examples. And generally, William Burroughs' book, Naked Lunch, is generally the one that's credited with finally ending that. But that's all like based around things like, you know, the concept of obscenity and stuff, which is kind of subjective. But what do you do in a democratic society when you're trying to restrict a book that is considered genuinely dangerous to to not just children, but generally people in general? A book that is not only terribly written, but is considered to be directly responsible for the death and genocide of millions upon millions of people in the 20th century. How does a democratic society go about being able to repress or restrict the distribution of such a book without somehow betraying the very democratic principles and the concepts of freedom of speech and freedom of the press that a democratic society is supposed to be based on? Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about that because there actually is a way that it happens. If you couldn't figure it out by now, the book I was talking about is Mein Kampf, which of course is the book that was published by Adolf Hitler before he became Chancellor of Germany and ultimately its dictator. I don't really need to describe exactly what it is. Really just sort of the backstory is that after the Nazis failed the coup in Munich in 1923, Hitler was put on trial for high treason in 1924. He was then sentenced to 5 years imprisonment. While he was there, he received several visitors, but he decided that, you know, he was going to be out of prison in a few years, he figured, I need to get all my ideas out there so I can give it a good second try. And what happened was he dictated the book. The book was dictated to another person because he didn't actually have like writing utensils in his jail cell with him. He basically dictated it to a priest that was named, let me see if I can find what his name was. I'm trying to remember. I just know, I don't think he was a priest. I believe he was like a Lutheran minister who was in like the German Lutheran Church and was apparently one of his sympathizers. And he was there to help write it all down. And then, of course, when Hitler finally was released, he then started to try and sort of make the Nazis a bit more legitimate in the eyes of the people, which, of course, would eventually end up with him becoming chancellor. But the book itself is basically what you would absolutely expect something to be written by Hitler. It's rambling, it rarely can stay on one subject, and he's constantly throwing out blames and accusations to just about every group he can think of. Obviously, Jews are his number one target, but he's also pissed off at, the Social Democrats, you know, who were one of the major parties in Parliament and were ones that helped sort of institute the Weimar Republic itself. He also is pissed at the actual Parliament. He is thinking about some sort of communist conspiracy. And he pretty much lays out everything that he would set out to do after he would come to power. It's all in the book. He doesn't hide any of it. He is 100% open about it. So of course Hitler comes out, he goes into power, World War II happens, and eventually he ends up committing suicide in his bunker in Berlin. So after the war ended, it was decided, what are we going to do with this book? Because it wasn't just that that the book was read, it was widely read. When Hitler was in power, a copy of the book would basically be given to every couple who were planning on having a child. It was like a gift that the government would give to any German couple. So there was like a ton of copies of this book everywhere. And they had to think, what are we going to do to make sure that this book can never get the kind of reach or, you know, popularity that it once had? Well, here's what they actually ended up doing. After Hitler died, the copyright actually passed to the state of Bavaria. Bavaria is, of course, you know, part of Germany. And, well, I say it's, let's see, it's, yeah, it's southeast Germany. So suddenly the state governor of Bavaria had absolute control on how this book could be distributed, published, translated, etc. And this is what they ended up doing. Since they had total control of it, they made absolutely sure that the book was never again published in German, at least as long as the copyright lasted. That would eventually end, but we'll be getting to that. Essentially, any type of version that you see that was published in any other language outside of Germany, most of them were actually directly copied from these older versions of the book that you can find. It could be the version that you'll see, and like there are Arabic versions that can be found that are translated from it, French, India, you know, Latvia, the Netherlands, Romania, Russia, Turkey, you know, all of these places in just all these languages. And pretty much what would happen is people would, you know, track down like old dusty versions of it and translate it into their native language. But as long as the state of Bavaria held on to the copyright of it, no further new official version of the book could ever be published. And that was as true in Germany as it was in the rest of the world. Any type version that was to be put forth, that was to be published, had to be made strictly for an academic sense. So it was something that was restricted to, you know, university libraries, you know, scholars' libraries, stuff like that. And usually the versions that are published are made to look as plain as they possibly can. For the longest time, the only quote-unquote official English version of this book that you could get was a very heavy, very non-descript-looking black cover with very plain sort of title on it. And then none of it is actually quoted on, like, the end pages or anything. It's just talking about, you know, the professors who brought this in and explaining why they wanted to publish it. However, the eventual eventual copyright did work, because the state of Bavaria decided, you know what, we at some point even were like, you know, they felt like there might have been some kind of moral hazard with keeping this copyright, so they decided to essentially hand it over to the German state itself. And what this did is, when they decided to publish a new version in 2016, they got a bunch of scholars and historians from all over the world to take part in publishing what they called a critical edition. And the idea was they would put out this giant, and I legitimately mean giant, the version that you get now is like over 1,000 pages, and it's vastly made up of footnotes and commentary more than the actual, like, contents of the book itself. And if you're thinking, you know, it's like, this was probably controversial in Germany. Oh, yes, it was. Very much so. When news erupted that they were getting ready to make a new version of this book, even though it is, again, a critical edition, it is specifically made to list all the critiques and obvious bullshit that Hitler put in this book, Germans were very divided about it for very obvious reasons. The German government itself said that they were planning on limiting public access to the text amid fears that its republication could stir some neo-Nazi sentiment, which, in Germany, that is a very real danger, because unfortunately, there are neo-Nazis in Germany, even though the German government does everything it possibly can to stamp out any kind of Nazi sentiment that comes into existence. Some bookstores in Germany said they would not stock it. And there was like one bookstore in Berlin that's called Dussmann that said it had one copy available on the shelves in the history section, and that they would not advertise it at all in copies that anybody else wanted would have to be available on order. It sold about 85,000 copies. But ultimately, that's sort of how they decide. Is like, if you want to genuinely restrict a book that is considered to be legitimately dangerous in a democratic society, you largely have to rely both on the elected power of the state itself, and you have to rely sort of on individual responsibility as well. The Germans are, you know, just the fact that they are hell-bent on making sure that Nazism never becomes a thing again in Germany, collectively have been able to restrict this book to such a degree, but I'm not sure anybody could do it outside of Germany. But that's just me. And that's been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. With that out of the way, it's now time for the show proper. And as always, with the show proper, we start off with our assholes of the week. And our first asshole of the week is the new Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, Liz Truss. Now, Liz Truss is a lot of things. I think for a lot of people, we pretty much our biggest, like, introduction to her was that speech she made at that Tory conference where she was talking about, in December, I'll be in Beijing opening brand new pork markets, with her giant shit-eating grin on her face. But, yeah, there's more to it, isn't there, Chris?
Yeah, she's the new prime minister.
Mm-hmm.
Met the queen to be, you know, like a confirmation ceremony of sorts.
Mm-hmm.
Which apparently led to the queen just dying soon after.
Yep.
Because she is such a shit show of a person, I guess.
Yeah. Way to give away the rest of the show there, Chris. But yeah, it's
oh, like, nobody wow. knew about that.
Oh, so. Nobody knew. It's total shock. But yeah, it's timing is kind of off, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's a thing that just led to a lot of memes when the queen died. So
mm-hmm.
that she met Boris and Liz Truss soon after each other and decided that was all she could handle in life.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this new prime minister is probably going to be more of the same bullshit. She's mm-hmm. another Tory.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody, you know, cataloged a series of headlines from one of the UK papers. It's like, Liz is the one we need to right the ship. Just mm-hmm. like, you know, with Boris Johnson and Theresa May and
yeah.
David Cameron. It's like, oh, well, I guess fourth chime's the charm.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe people will vote against these people
mm-hmm.
that have been trying to ruin their country for decade plus at least,
mm-hmm.
if not longer. But yeah, this is the new asshole's going to be running things. Maybe we'll improve things in the short term.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's not what the Tories do.
Nope.
So we'll see how it goes in the long term.
I don't necessarily have the. She's got. Let me put it this way. She's going to have some shit to fix.
Yeah.
If she's serious about fixing it. Right now, UK, they got some issues. If you've been paying attention over there.
I guess now, at least the start, like her initial cabinet has no white males in it. So at least mm-hmm. there's some diversity there.
Yeah. So other assholes of the week. Well, we found out this week. I think one of the things we've been talking about, because it's been basically dominating the headlines for the last couple of weeks, was all of the materials, classified materials that were found in boxes in Mar-a-Lago. And now, of course, the Department of Justice is trying to go through all this stuff. It's like, okay, what exactly are we going to do going from here? Well, a federal judge that was actually appointed by the former president has actually granted his request for a special master to review the documents seized by the FBI. Now, I actually don't know what the significance of this is. Is this actually going to change anything, or is it just like a stalling tactic?
It's mostly going to be a stalling tactic, especially if it stays,
because mm-hmm.
the DOJ has appealed it
mm-hmm.
Pretty quickly, because it seems like a lot of this is centered around this judge herself,
mm-hmm.
as she has never been a judge in her life. She was a lawyer
mm-hmm.
that was also a member of the Federalist Society.
Yep.
And that's her main qualification for this position.
Because
she was one of the late appointees mm-hmm. near the end of his term for mm-hmm. Trump. So, yeah, basically this is like a thing that's a lot of people didn't understand. This kind of law are basically like,
mm-hmm.
this is some gross overstepping of power here
mm-hmm.
by this judge. The judge said she was inclined to grant Trump's request, and a hearing on the matter took place last Thursday. Basically, like, she made this decision without the DOJ ever having the ability to mm-hmm. respond to it.
Yeah.
Which, generally, you want to hear both sides
mm-hmm.
to make a decision that is important in this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's probably something that's going to maybe overruled
mm-hmm.
by another judge. But yeah, this judge also ordered the government to cease any review or use of materials for its criminal investigation.
Yeah,
until the special master review is completed. But she said the intelligence community may continue its review to determine potential national security risks.
Mm-hmm.
The classified material being kept outside of a secure government facility.
Mm.
So, yeah, that's kind of the whole thing here. Instead of deadline for yesterday for the two parties to submit a joint filing with lists of proposed candidates to be named special master and all this other stuff. And it's like, I don't recall seeing anything about that having been done. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the DOJ has appealed it, saying that, you know, they have serious concerns about handing government secrets to a third party for this. The government is asking for a stay on the judge's order to halt its use of these classified records for its criminal investigation and had to turn over these documents to a special master for review. Authorities want to be able to review those classified papers freely and don't want to give them to any third party right now. So that's
yeah,
a whole big mess here.
Oh yes, it is. And finally, for our assholes of the week, Steve Bannon. He is officially facing New York State charges that he defrauded donors to rebuild the wall, which is that little private group that he founded to get private funds that was supposed to build Trump's wall on the Mexican border, which, of course, that didn't happen. It almost all went into his pocket.
Yeah, charity group that was supposed to construct the wall on the U.S.-Mexican border, and he and others in the group are accused of skimming money from the donors.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, it was like travel and credit card debt, paying off credit card debt stuff.
Yeah.
The original federal case, there were three co-defendants, two pled guilty, and another had a mistrial. But a person familiar with the New York case says Bannon will turn himself in to authorities, as he did a couple days ago. Mm-hmm. They'll make him a member of a large and growing group of former top Trump associates in trouble with the law.
Mm.
That's on top of his conviction of contempt of Congress for refusing to comply with the subpoena by the House Committee investigating the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, yeah. So, that was the assholes of the week. But don't worry. We do have some heroes of the week. Because, you know, it's not all bad. First and foremost, there was a judge in New Mexico who ruled that a Otero County commissioner is now disqualified from office after being convicted of charge during the January 6th insurrection. And I've seen pictures of this dude, and he looks the part.
Yeah, his name, Coey Griffin?
Yeah.
C-O-U-Y.
Mm-hmm.
He's a white guy, so it's like, where is that first name coming from? Is that a...
Mm-hmm.
Did you write the D weird and they just took it as a U? Who knows, but...
Yeah.
He's a county commissioner in Otero County, New Mexico, who, as it happens, was at the January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol, had been charged and convicted for entering a restricted area during, you know, the whole riot that was going on there. And so this district court judge, Francis Matthew, ruled that he is now disqualified from holding public office because he violated Section 3 of the 14th Amendment by participating in the January 6th siege. He took an oath to support the Constitution of the United States and then engaged in that insurrection after taking his oath.
Yep.
Pretty clear cut.
Yeah.
Though the guy himself said, I don't think it's fair to accuse me of insurrection. I didn't have any intent of being a part of an insurrection or a violent mob.
My intent of going to Washington. It doesn't matter, dude. You still took part in it.
Yeah, my intent of going to Washington, D.C. on January 6th was because I had concerns that our elections had been compromised.
Mm.
You know, which those concerns involved breaking into the U.S. Capitol to help wreck up the place and allow certain underhanded individuals easier access to potential senators and house reps that could be killed. And maybe secrets found and taken and used for whatever. But hey, there you go.
Yeah.
This guy, the ruling is that he should be removed.
So
I assume that will be happening. Depending on appeals or whatever.
Yeah.
So on, but yeah. Goodbye to this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And just in case you wondered, he first declined to certify the county's primary election, citing baseless claims about the security of voting machines. State Supreme Court then stepped in, ordering him to certify it.
Yeah.
and the commissioners ultimately voted 2-1 for certification, with this loser being the one no vote.
Yeah. Now, moving on to Michigan, that its 1931 abortion ban was unconstitutional, and on top of that, their Supreme Court has now ruled that an abortion vote would go on this fall's ballot. Now, this, of course, comes after Kansas had their abortion ban put on the ballot and overwhelmingly rejected it. It was like over 70%. So I have a feeling that Michigan is probably going to be even more than that. But
yeah, it's because they had to petition for this. Mm-hmm. They collected about 750,000 signatures, which was almost double the 425,000 that are required. I don't know if you saw the bullshit around just getting to this point of getting it on the ballot.
Yeah.
Because the GOP were harping on so-called spacing and formatting of the the argument as it was, or the amendment as it was written to be put on the ballot.
Yeah.
Which, you know, was trying to say, like, oh, this is illegible for people to read and understand. It's like, no, it's not. The Supreme Court is basically, there's no real issue here. They'll have a chance to tidy it up if they need to, but there's no real issue here.
So I'm guessing they're going to be voting on midterms.
Yeah, this fall.
Yeah, so... And if I'm remembering correctly, the midterm is November the 8th. So, yeah, make your plans, people.
Yeah, Michigan, California, Vermont at the moment are going to have state constitutional abortion right amendments on their ballots. So I assume at least California will pass. Vermont probably will as well. We'll have to see how this stuff all plays out, but it seems like a lot of the Roe v. Wade stuff with the Supreme Court has led to a lot of women and younger people to register to vote than have generally done at this point in the past, especially for a midterm. So hopefully that bolsters efforts for Democrats to keep the Senate and all that.
Yeah. But, yeah, moving on from there, finally for Years of the Week, more than 70 stolen antiquities that were at the Met and others have been seized and returned to rightful owners in both Italy and...
Some were more than 2,000 years old. Yeah, included a mummy portrait, a marble head of the goddess Athena, and an intricately painted drinking cup. Among others, the return came after a string of search warrants enacted by the Manhattan District Attorney that targeted private collectors, as well as the Metropolitan Museum of Art in Manhattan. Of these 74 antiquities, valued at more than $22 million, 27 were seized from the Met. So, yeah, thankfully, they were discovered to be officially stolen, though there are definitely questions in here. About, like, the Met should have known that the ownership stuff around these items were at the very least questionable. And so why aren't they the ones digging into this information to figure it out instead of having to let the authorities do the work and force their hand on this stuff? But that's a whole load of issues dealing with, you know, colonialism and all that. And the way that stuff is just taken from countries as new people take over those areas.
Speaking of which, speaking of colonialism and theft of treasure, we might as well talk about it because it was the one thing that everybody has been talking about the last couple of days. On Thursday... Queen Elizabeth II, Elizabeth Windsor, Queen of the Realm, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera, died at the age of 96. Man, the internet was just a fun fucking time after the broke, wasn't it?
There were a lot of groups that are like, ooh, here's our chance to really dig in about what we think of the monarchy.
Yeah.
You know, like Ireland.
Yeah.
Many people throughout Africa, mm-hmm. India,
Barbados,
US.
Mm-hmm.
They have a long reach of colonialism across the world.
Yeah, and a lot of those places are still dealing with the aftermath to this day.
And still, even if they are independent, still deal with the notion of, hey, you know that crown jewel of Africa that you guys yeah. renamed that is one of the most expensive jewels in the world?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, we would like that back.
Yeah.
But you guys say it was a gift, and it's like, no.
No, you straight up stole it from us.
You stole it and then thanked them for the gift.
Yeah. Over in Ireland, you know, their parliament building, they still have to pay money to the British crown for the you know, for the using rights. So,
yeah. You know, and there's a whole thing with that, which is like a thing that I didn't know that much about. The whole thing with the potato famine.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't really a famine. It was England saying, hey, we would like as much food as we can get from you.
Yeah.
Even if that will starve your people.
Yeah, also the fact that they had very Malthusian idea of, you know, the surplus population. Yeah, you know how they talk about the surplus population in A Christmas Carol? Oh, it didn't come from just anywhere.
Yeah.
And yes, the famine in Ireland is directly tied to that.
Because they didn't consider the Irish to be
people, basically.
White people, essentially.
Yeah.
Despite them being the whitest people in the history of the earth.
Yes, extremely white, like translucent white.
Like when they started coming over in the early 1900s, you know, stereotypically, like in New York with the Italians, like those two groups weren't necessarily considered white people.
No.
For a long time.
Yeah.
Until probably desegregation, when it's like, oh, we need you guys on our side.
Yeah.
So black people around that are free.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's just, you know, the way that they treated even people within the royal family. Like, look how they treated Diana.
Yeah. And I guess I read that there are secret royal members that were born with disabilities and such. They just decided to claim were dead, even though they were alive.
They locked them away in little retreats and stuff and pretended that they didn't exist. Because you know how royals are. They're so unbelievably inbred that at some point there's going to be some real genetic defects in there somewhere.
I mean, you saw what happened when one of them married a non-white person.
Yeah, look at what they did to Meghan Markle. Like,
they drove him out of the country.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, like, apparently Queen expressly forbid Meghan Markle to attend her funeral. So there is that.
So upset by that.
Yeah. So forgive me if I'm not all aboard the crying train about,
like, oh, she saw the end of the colonization. It's like, no. Cause guess what? Under her rule, she helped out a lot of those residential schools that mm-hmm. were like re-educating the native population in Canada and other places.
Yeah, she gave direct financial access, and she also was, you know, just the fact that she was the figurehead for one of the most wasteful monarchies on the planet. She, like, the amount of money and treasure that the royal family in the UK pisses away every year is astronomical. It could be enough to fund the GDP of a small country for a year.
Yeah, especially as they expand continually.
Mm-hmm.
It's more people that get stipends and all that every month or whatever
mm-hmm.
to keep their extravagant lifestyles continuing, even though they have no real, you know, power.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, like stealing those jewels and all that kind of stuff help feed into that financial power they have.
Yeah. So, yeah, now that she's died, of course, King Charles III formerly Prince Charles George of her son, is now, of course, officially the King of England.
The oldest king to be sworn in.
Yeah.
Or modern mankind, so.
I'm going to say right now, the dissolution of the Commonwealth and the reunification of Ireland have never been more possible than at this very moment. Because for all the shit that Queen Elizabeth did during her lifetime, she built up a degree of respectability and unifying power that Charles just does not have.
No, there's plenty of Brits lining up to make fun of him.
Mm-hmm.
Like I saw, oh, who was it? It's a wrestler, a famous British wrestler, who's like, are they going to be able to fit Charles's profile on the stamps?
Mm-hmm.
Because of his ears, his comically large ears.
Yeah.
And all that. And it's like, yeah, they, I mean, again, Brits generally don't care about the monarchy. They're not even a major part of their life.
No.
There's still a big segment that does whenever, like, there's a marriage or whatever going on, you know, to turn out for that. But that's also celebrity culture.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he probably won't be that for super long.
No, and even as long as it exists, there's going to be some serious downsizing that's going to happen under Charles because, I mean, like I said, look at the economic, you know, crisis that's happening in the UK right now. You know, because of Brexit and all the ramifications behind that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm like, you know, there is this question of, like, how much longer will the monarchy outlast her? Because odds are not good right now.
Yeah.
So that happened. And of course, you know, probably one of the best parts about all this was just all the people who were like, why you guys gotta be joking? We're all in mourning right now. No, you're not. Well, I mean, you might, but most people.
It was funny seeing all the corporate stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when it came to, let's say, musicals like Hamilton,
mm-hmm.
Les Mis, that kind of stuff, where it's like, ooh, this is good corporate weirdo-ness.
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff. And yeah, it was a fun time to be on the internet for people to lash out at the general slobbery going on over...
Mm-hmm.
A monarchy of extreme wealth.
Yep.
That is increasingly irrelevant in modern day life.
Yeah. But anyway, that's all we're going to say about that. Fuck those people. But moving on.
We have to think about them for
a
decade or two, maybe at most.
Yeah, until Charles also kicks it. Or gets his head, you know, chopped off in the guillotine, whichever happens first.
Well, this is good they didn't give it to Philip.
Yeah, God. Can you imagine?
Corpse.
Yeah, can you imagine the just fucking. Oh, we'll just end it there.
He's that grandparent that you're like surprised people still let drive.
Yeah.
Because he continually got in accidents.
Yep. You know, when he wasn't, you know, busy, you know, raping sex slaves with Jeffrey Epstein, but
yeah,
that's another story. All right. So moving on from there, we're moving over to the state of California, where California has been dealing with a record setting heat wave before they got hit by Tropical Storm K.
Well, at least SoCal's getting hit by it.
Yeah.
But yeah, they have been dealing with a lot of triple digit temperatures over the past week throughout much of the state, as well as having, you know, fires going on in various parts. I think I saw a phrase here about like the weed wildfire started in a part of California called weed.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like, okay, that's a weird phrase to say without explaining it, but whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they've been having... Yeah, California State Capitol Sacramento tied a record Tuesday with its 41st day of temperatures reaching at least 100 degrees Fahrenheit.
Mm-hmm.
There's a chance they would break its all-time high temperature of 114 degrees set in 1925.
Yeah.
You know, 100 years in the making sort of thing. But yeah, the Tropical Storm K came out of Mexico, right up the Baja Peninsula and all that.
Yep.
With parts of Southern California under flash flood warnings on Friday, as the tropical storm was about to hit and drop a year's worth of rain in areas of the drought-stricken state. So maybe that'll help in that instance, though probably going to be lots of flooding that doesn't happen, make that stuff as beneficial as it could be.
Yeah.
But it seems like the storm has weakened incredibly in the past day, so should mostly just be rain at this point, depending on how much. But yeah, there's some mostly good news. But yeah, they've been dealing with like rolling outages and all that kind of stuff.
Oh yeah,
as well, which, you know, was the favorite thing of any GOP on the Twitters. It's like, oh, this is what communism gets you, and it's like, what the fuck are you talking about? This is capitalism.
Yeah. Yeah. Now for some more good news, though. I wish it was near this close. South Carolina just barely rejected a near-total abortion ban. And the reason is because five Republicans, including all of the women in the chamber, refused to support it. So.
Yeah, and the one man that did this, what's his name? Tom Davis. Said he promised his daughters he would not vote to make South Carolina's current 6-week abortion ban stricter because women have rights too.
Yeah.
Which is a hell of a thing, a hell of a statement right there. It's like, that's an incredibly low bar. Because 6 weeks is already too short.
Yeah.
But he's like, I'm promising you we're not going to make it like you're in the... in the Holocaust or anything. We're going to go even worse on you guys. We'll just let it at 6. But yeah, that's good news. The fifth GOP person plus all Democrats allowed them to do a filibuster to stop the rest of the GOP from passing this. And yeah, going with the, I think the House passed this bill, but the Senate Majority Leader there is basically like, oh, this wasn't going to pass either way. It's like, the rest of you guys all voted for it, so it's pure luck of who decided to stand up for women that it failed.
But, yeah. All right, next up from there, Juul Labs. We all know them as much as we wish we didn't. Well, this week they will be paying nearly $440 million to settle a 2-year investigation by 33 different states into its marketing. Specifically, all the marketing it did to kids.
Yeah.
To, and they did a lot of marketing to kids and teens.
Yep. Yeah, Connecticut Attorney General William Tong announced the deal on Tuesday on behalf of the states plus Puerto Rico. Was joined together in 2020 to probe Juul's early promotions and claims about the safety and benefit of its technology as a smoking alternative. Settlement resolves one of the biggest legal threats facing the beleaguered company, which still faces 9 separate lawsuits from other states. Additionally, Juul faces hundreds of personal suits brought on behalf of teenagers and others who say they became addicted to the company's vaping products. The state investigation found that Juul marketed its e-cigarettes to underage teens with launch parties, product giveaways, ads, and social media posts using youthful models. And all that kind of stuff. It's $438.5 million paid out over the period of 6 to 10 years. And it gets payment of at least $16 million to go towards vaping prevention and education efforts. Juul previously settled lawsuits in Arizona, Louisiana, North Carolina, and Washington. So yeah, there you go. Some good news, but it seems like the marketing for the company for the near future and all that is going to largely focus on older smokers. Getting them to switch to vaping instead of smoking. All right, good luck with that. Get them hooked while they're before they die.
Yeah,
I guess.
But yeah, so, yeah, that happened. Oh, boy. Yeah, I mean, it's it's really difficult to talk about, like, how, you know, how quickly those things became so prominent and just started to spread literally everywhere almost overnight, and just the sheer amount of damage that they did. Because the freaking, you know, the tobacco companies, I mean, they're as far as, like, the totem pole of evil corporations go, the tobacco companies are pretty close to the top. Next up, a Malaysian defense contractor has managed that has been at the center of a bribery investigation has actually escaped custody 3 weeks before his sentencing in one of the Navy's biggest bribery scandals. His name is Fat Leonard.
Yeah, his nickname at least.
Yeah.
And yeah, this was just house arrest that he was escaping. U-Haul trucks were seen at his home in a tiny San Diego neighborhood before Leonard Glenn Francis, known as Fat Leonard, snipped off his ankle monitor and disappeared.
Yep.
Which is like, you don't have, like, sensors to tell that it's being messed with in any way? Like that?
They might not. I mean, it depends on, you know, the type of ankle monitor they put on him.
Yeah, though this is like a federal thing.
Yeah.
Like, it should have been top-of-the-line stuff for somebody like this that is an important figure. But, yeah, nearly a dozen U.S. law enforcement agencies were searching for Francis on Tuesday. Officials acknowledge he may already be in Mexico, possibly on his way back to Asia. Already. So, yeah, 4 years ago, U.S. District Court Judge Janice San Martino feared Francis might run off when she turned down his lawyer's request to allow him to be under house arrest without round-the-clock security guards watching the ailing defense contractor. At the time, Francis was cooperating with prosecutors as they pursued charges against dozens of Navy officials who accepted bribes in exchange for classified information that gave Francis his ship servicing business in Asia an edge in getting military contracts.
Yep.
And his lawyer, who pushed for more leniency for his client at the time, said, "At this time, I have no comment. Sorry." But yeah, that's a whole thing there.
Yeah. My theory maybe is that someone down the line that might be on his payroll or whatever intentionally gave him a bracelet that could easily be escaped from, that could easily be removed specifically for that reason. Or maybe gave him the tools to do it without being traced. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's possible, but
but they were able to just pull up a U-Haul and, like, get him out of there.
Yeah.
Like, it's some real, you know, cheap shit that was able to foil these U.S. agencies.
Yeah. Anyway, and now for some labor news, because as we've been telling you guys, momentum side of labor right now, and this week the minor league players of minor league baseball, which of course is associated with major league baseball, voted to form a players union after a vote.
Yep. They had more than half of them vote for it, so yeah, major league baseball is at least saying that they're ready to voluntarily recognize the union to go alongside the Major League Players Union. As Commissioner Rob Manfred has already said here in the past couple days. So that should be good, because minor league players do not make much, if any, kind of money. A lot of them are under the federal, federal poverty line. The majority of minor league players earn between $400 to $700 per week and only paid during the regular season. Over the course of a season, most players earn less than $13,590 federal poverty line for a single person. So, like, they need to work, you know, other jobs in the off season and all that kind of stuff, which is like how baseball was in the early 1900s. Or unless you're maybe a big time player, and even then, you might have like a normal job you did outside of games instead of just focusing your entire life around that.
So that's good. We'll see where that story goes, but Now for the entertainment portion of the show, we start with an official teaser trailer for Glass Onion, A Knives Out Mystery, which of course is a spinoff to the critically acclaimed mystery film Knives Out.
Yeah, and this is looking real nice. Mm-hmm. It's basically set in whatever, they go on a cruise, I think to this island maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But then some sort of mystery unfolds as Benoit Blanc is sort of dealing with a new crew of potential suspects,
mm-hmm.
led by big names like Edward Norton, Janelle Monáe, Catherine Hahn, Lizzie Odom Jr., Jessica Henwick, mm-hmm. Madeline Klein, Kate Hudson, Dave Bautista.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like it's going to make for a pretty fun movie,
mm-hmm.
Especially because it seems like a lot of what's going on here involves puzzles of some sort, especially in the way that they kind of present this teaser here. It's supposed to be mm-hmm. out sometime later this year, but that's going to be a fun movie to see and see Daniel Craig just chewing up that Southern accent that he came mm-hmm. up with for that first movie. That's some kind of brilliant, shitty Southern accent stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go.
Yeah. And we also got an official teaser for Wendell and Wild, which I believe is a... Let me see.
It's the movie you talked about last week that mm-hmm. is from the director of The Nightmare Before Christmas and mm-hmm. Coraline, and has Jordan Peele and Keegan-Michael Key playing a pair of personal demons
mm-hmm.
for a character.
Mm-hmm.
As well as has Angela Bassett, James Hong, and Bing Rames in it.
Good.
But yeah, you got a lot of stop-motion style stuff going on here, though I imagine it's mostly CG at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if you liked Coraline and The Night Before Christmas, this seems right up that alley of like animation, some spooky stuff to it, and all that kind of stuff. That is... I think going to be out October 28th, just in time for Halloween.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And finally, to round up the show, we got some news from D23. Plenty of Disney-related stuff. First, as far as Disney Plus goes, there's a $1.99 month deal until September 19th.
And so, you can sign up for 1 month.
Yep.
For... a cheaper price if you haven't done so.
Mm-hmm.
Or you have it maybe expiring right before then.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what the specifics are on that, but at least for this first month, you'll be able to get, I think, Hocus Pocus 2 will be out September 30th.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be able to watch the rest of She-Hulk,
mm-hmm.
as well as some of the other Halloween stuff that's coming out here
mm-hmm.
Through the rest of the month and into October.
Yeah.
But yeah, they announced a bunch of other stuff and all that going on.
Mm, yeah. We also found out that the sequel to Inside Out, Inside Out 2, is coming summer 2024.
Yep. Amy Poehler is returning to voice Joy.
Mm-hmm.
Meg LaFalve, who co-wrote the original movie with Peter Docter and Josh Cooley, is back to write the script. Mark Nielsen's producing this one. But yeah, we'll be out in about 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, be following the same kid, Riley,
yep.
Who is going to be a teenager, which was kind of how the original ended, as she was kind of beginning her teenage years, kind of. So there you go.
Yeah. All right. We also found out that the Lion King, specifically the 2019 version, is getting a prequel.
Yeah, centered around Mufasa and his rise to being the Lion King, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I don't know why, but there you go.
Yeah. I guess it was originally announced as some sort of sequel, but this is more of a prequel.
Yeah.
To that. And you get Mufasa with his brother Scar and all that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Mm. Oh. Also, we are getting a teaser trailer for the live-action version of The Little Mermaid starring Halle Berry. And
Halle Bailey.
Halle Bailey. Not sorry, I'm...
Way different ages there.
Yeah.
But yeah, she sounds great in this.
And looks great, too.
Yeah. Just seeing people, like, complaining, like, how dark it is. Like, that's how water works.
Yep.
In the ocean, the light diffuses pretty quickly.
Yeah.
You know, but, yes.
Yeah, I mean, for God's sakes, look at the original movie. Do you see how much dark, like, area there is?
Yeah. You might look at all the, like, colorful stuff, but that's, you know, it's also a teaser.
Mm-hmm.
Basically introduce Halle Bailey in this role. Mm-hmm. And you're like, hey, she's going to be great.
Mm-hmm.
This is out May 26th, 2023, so less than a year away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, theaters. Not a Disney Plus thing.
Yep.
Yeah, Lin-Manuel Miranda is also working on music, working on music for this.
Yep.
They're done with that at this point. But yeah, they have her as Ariel, David Diggs as Sebastian, Jacob Tremblay, who's in Luca.
Mm-hmm.
He's the voice of Flounder. Awkwafina is Scuttle.
Yep.
Jonah Howard King is Prince Eric. Art Malik is Sir Grimsby.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to see. Javier Bardem is King Triton.
Yep.
And Melissa McCarthy is Ursula.
Mm.
So yeah, there you go.
All right.
I think people are like wanting Lizzo to be Ursula or something like that. Which would probably been pretty good.
Yeah, probably. But and then we also got an official trailer for Disenchanted.
Yeah, the follow-up to Enchanted?
Yeah.
I never saw the original, but maybe I will check it out. This looks pretty neat. It's just sort of like, hey, what if one of these princesses showed up in modern day?
Well, that was basically the plot of Enchanted.
Yeah.
But
this one is the follow-up. I'm not sure what the story is here. Been 15 years since Giselle and Robert wed.
Mm-hmm.
But Giselle has grown disillusioned with life in the city, so they moved their growing family to the sleepy suburban community of Monroeville in search of a more fairy tale life.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, things don't go well because there's no quick fix for that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go.
And we also got the official Focus 2.
Yeah, this looks like it's going to be neat, but kind of more of the original.
Yep.
As they have the bit of like, here's what the sisters did in the old times. Or, yeah, I guess their formation as witches of sorts. And then fast forward to modern day, even though they were destroyed in the original, never to be seen again.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be returning, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
This is out September 30th. So Disney Plus.
Yep.
Not theaters, but...
Yeah. And we also got an official trailer for Willow. That is the series that acts as a sequel to the original film from George Lucas. Yeah, it looks good.
Yeah. Might have to check out the movie. I don't expect the production values on that to be as good as this looks.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the original movie used practical effects, so...
Yeah. But yeah, this will be on November 30th for Disney+.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you can check it out in about 2 months, 2.5 months.
Yep. And we also got a trailer for Andor. That is a Star Wars movie, and it actually looks really good.
Yeah, it's, I think, a series.
Mm-hmm.
Prequel to Rogue One.
Yep.
Featuring Cassius Andor
as,
you know, they're showing his struggles in the rebellion leading up to Rogue One and all that. So, yeah, they'll have a 3-episode premiere starting September 21st. So,
yeah,
less than 2 weeks away for that.
Looks like a show that sort of shows the nitty gritty of rebellion, which kind of something I've been wanting for a while.
Yeah.
It's part of the reason I liked Rogue One. But, yeah. And we also got a trailer for National Treasure, Edge of History.
Series.
Yep.
That'll be starting, when is it? December 14th, 2-episode premiere. They don't have Nick Cage in this, just as a heads up. They do have a couple other characters in it. What's his name? Riley, the sidekick, is in this. Harvey Keitel is back from the second movie. He's, I guess, like the mentor for the kids that are doing stuff. He shows up a lot here. That are kind of exploring all this. But yeah, that could be neat.
Yeah.
Looking forward to it. I would be surprised to see like Nick Cage show up at the end or something. But we'll see.
And last but not least, we got an official trailer for Secret Invasion.
Yeah, this looks neat. It's a series for Disney Plus. It's out next year. Don't know if they have an actual date in this or if that's going to be something they announce later. But yeah, this is neat looking. Looking forward to seeing more of this. And it's kind of very much a like agent thriller as it deals with Nick Fury, who's been, you know, hiding in space for much of the past few canonical, like the chronological movies. And he's sort of come back down with the revelation that maybe a lot of these heroes aren't who we thought they were.
Yeah.
The original was all about the Kroll having secretly taken the place of a lot of the superheroes. Though in current MCU, the Kroll are not bad guys. As far as we know, this teaser trailer doesn't really go into any details on that stuff. But it seems like a lot of Nick Fury trying to figure out, you know, what's going on and how deep it all goes.
Yeah.
Which is going to be a pretty good time.
But, yeah, that will wrap it up for us this week. We, as always, if you want to write into the show, something you want us to read on the air or have a question for us, you can contact us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link for it in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can get in touch and see our unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or really any kind of podcast aggregator you can think of. So, yeah, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up here. We hope you enjoyed a little bit of stuff that we had this week. Granted, we had a small crowd, but we definitely had stuff to talk about. If you liked what you heard, please tell your friends, your families, your enemies, perhaps your
blood enemies.
Yeah, blood enemies, or maybe people who are somewhere between friend and enemy. You know, frenemies. Apparently that's a thing. You know, basically anybody who won't, you know, try and, like, you know, tie you up and throw you in their basement for talking to them.
The way about half of the characters in Cobra Kai relate to the others.
Yeah, like that, basically. See, the worst they'll do is just break your leg.
I mean, there's worse stuff that's happened.
Yeah. I mean, we're doing best case scenario here.
Yeah.
But yeah. So yeah, we'll wrap it up here, and we hope everybody listening has a great week. We'll see you all next week with more bullshit, hopefully with a larger crowd, and hopefully you'll still be alive without, you know, a broken limb or whatever. Good night, everybody.